And hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 31 of the Weekly Yap, the Yes And podcast. I'm your host, Travis Thomas, the creator of Live Yes and the host of the Weekly Yap. So thank you so much for joining the Yap for this week, episode 31. So excited to have Rachel Belkovic joining us as our guest today. She is the first female strength and conditioning coach in professional baseball. So it's not very often here on the Weekly Yap that I get to have pioneers in an industry, and she truly is a pioneer because she is the first. And when you hear the interview that that she and I have with one another, you will see and understand why she has been able to break into this field, and as you will hear, she has no plans on slowing down anytime soon. But before we get into that, just a quick reminder for everyone who is listening. If you don't, check me out on social media. I am at LiveYesAnd. My website is LiveYesAnd.com. And just a reminder to all of you that starting on May 1st is a 30 days of Yes 101 program. So another 30 days of Yes 101 program, that is $60 for the month. Or if you find a couple of friends who want to do it with you, for every three that sign up, the fourth one is free. So if you want to explore your purpose, your authenticity, and just live with a greater sense of your yes and your yes and, make sure you check out that program starting on May 1st. There you go. You can find more under events at liveyesand.com. So let's go ahead and get in that interview with Rachel, the first female strength and conditioning coach in professional baseball. So here you go. Let's welcome Rachel to the Yap. And welcome to this week's Weekly Yap on the phone right now. Actually, on Skype right now, I have the one and only damsel in the dugout, Rachel Belkovic. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the Weekly Yes And podcast today.
Absolutely. I'm psyched to be here.
Well, good. Now, Rachel, just to make everyone feel a little jealous, tell everyone where you are right now.
Oh, it's kind of deceiving, but I'm in the Dominican Republic right now.
Okay. And so, and go ahead and give us the spiel. Who are you working with right now? And how does that sort of play into your day-to-day work?
So basically, my title with the Houston Astros is the Latin American Strength and Conditioning Coordinator. So basically, for those of you who don't know, there are many, 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 many levels to the minor league system. You probably heard of AAA, and there's also AA, High A, Low A, Rookie, and then the Dominican affiliate, which almost every single team, or I believe every single team in Major League Baseball has at least one team in the Dominican Republic, but we actually have two. So I am overseeing all of those athletes, which means basically about 85 to 100 athletes in the Dominican Republic. And then also I am the Gulf Coast League strength coach as well. And so I'm overseeing those athletes. So in total, probably managing around 120 athletes and then three strength coaches that are living in the Dominican Republic and working directly with those two teams.
Okay. And so so you'll be coming back and forth between the United States and the Dominican throughout the whole season.
Yes, back and forth.
Okay, and so let's get into it a little bit because you are the first female professional strength and conditioning coach in Major League Baseball. And so, how did that all come about?
Well, I played softball in college, and I was exposed to professional baseball probably sometime around the middle of my college career, and a lot of the guys that I knew were getting drafted, and I was close with a lot of them, and so kind of got exposed to the minor league system. And I mean, I think I had the same misconception as everybody else, or a lot of people, I should say. Even as a college athlete, I had no idea everything that goes into minor league baseball, and I just became so fascinated with it, especially the Latin American operations, which is what I'm doing now. So I'm kind of like, this is totally a dream job for me, as much as most people want to be like in the big leagues. That's not necessarily my end game, and I love working with the Latin American players, and that's something I've always wanted to do since I first started learning about the entire minor league system. So I was in my strength and conditioning career, kind of started out, I was an intern at Athletes Performance, which is now Exos. And then I was a graduate assistant at LSU, Louisiana State University. And while I was there, I was telling my boss how much I wanted to be in professional baseball. And I was just basically putting the word out. And the Cardinals ended up, after I got done at LSU, maybe a couple of months afterwards, the Cardinals called LSU and said, hey, can you recommend someone for the job? And they recommended me. And so I got a call, interviewed, and I was on my way. I did an internship with the Cardinals in 2012. And then after that, I left to go start a PhD, and I was out of baseball for a year. And then the Cardinals called me back in 2014 and offered me the coordinator position. So I was the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator for 2 years for the Cardinals. And that's basically, I oversaw all eight of our minor league teams and assisted the major league strength coach with whatever he needed. And then I basically just, now I've changed, you know, switched gears again. I'm the Latin American strength coordinator for the Astros. So it's been, that's like the super, super short version of the whole story. But yeah, it's, I could go on for hours.
Okay. Well, and working with the Cardinals, that means you spend a lot of time in my backyard here down in Jupiter then.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yep. Excellent. And so what was it? At what point, Rachel, did you know, was it college or was it before that this is a career that you'd be interested in?
Strength and conditioning probably came to me during college as a college athlete. And I just basically, more or less, I struggled. I had mental anxiety on the field and I struggled with on-field performance. And I had to find a different way to contribute to the team. And so my role, as much as I look back at it, it was extremely tough at the time to know my role and what I was doing. I wasn't a starter, and so I had to find a way to contribute in other ways, and I found that in the weight room. And I definitely excelled. I mean, I was physically a strong athlete, extremely strong, probably the strongest girl on the team and one of the fastest, even being a catcher. But I just really mentally bought into the fact that it was helping us develop discipline and the intangibles. Mm-hmm. And so I probably sometime around my freshman, sophomore year of college, I was like, this is what I want to do. And I immediately, you know, I pretty much knew from there. I kind of strayed away a few times thinking I was going to do a PhD in nutrition, thinking I was going to get my MBA, thinking I was going to be a physical therapist. I mean, it was all kind of wrapping into the same thing. But when I found baseball, I immediately fell in love after doing that internship with the Cardinals, and I still absolutely love my job today. So
what is it then for you, do you think? What's the what's that motivation? What's the inspiration with the specific job that you really connect with?
This job specifically, the Latin American Strength and Conditioning Coordinator, I sought this job out 2 years ago, actually, and I wasn't fluent enough, and some things just didn't really pan out, and so I ended up getting a coordinator job with the Cardinals, which obviously was not bad either. But now this job is 2 years in the making for me, so I'm very glad to have the opportunity. And the reason being is that, you know, this is extremely, extremely unique. It's an extremely unique part of sports. You get to work with kids who are 15, 16 years old. And not only that, but they have such a different upbringing than the high school kids in the United States. You know, they're extremely raw athletes. They don't have sports performance facilities that they go to. You know, they don't have the local sports performance facility they've been going to since they were 12. They don't have the travel ball teams. They're just extremely raw in every sense of the word sometimes. Not all of them, but a majority of them are. And so we get this like ball of clay that we just have an opportunity to really mold them physically, but also mentally. I mean, some of those kids, not all, but some of them are coming from very impoverished backgrounds, and you have an opportunity to literally change the course of their life. Not just get them stronger or make them a better baseball player. I mean, when you think about it, that's a very insignificant thing to do for them. It's the process that you take to get them there that is what I believe is significant. And giving them those intangibles of, you know, how to be a young man, what it means to be responsible, what it means to be disciplined, what it means to have aspirations beyond what they've ever dreamed. You know, because sometimes there's a low ceiling in a third world country like the Dominican Republic, where people don't always, you know that they have high ceilings, and they have these imaginary limitations, yeah. And they only see what's around them, which sometimes is people not living up to their potential. So, like I said, just really having an opportunity to affect someone's life positively. is what draws me to this specific position, working with the Latin American players.
And so it sounds like for you that it's really about that that connection with changing lives, inspiring lives.
1,000%.
And the tract that you have picked to do that is strength and conditioning.
Exactly. Like that's, I say that all the time is, you know, my passion is empowerment, and however I do that is how I do that. I mean, it could have been anything. Coaching is a very easy way to do that, I think. And strength and conditioning is just like strength and conditioning coach comes first. You know, it just happens to be that I'm in the weight room doing it, but I'm still a coach. I'm a mentor. I'm someone they can go to for inspiration, motivation. Those things are all very high on my list, and my passion is empowerment, and my job is strength and conditioning, just so happens to be, but has nothing to do with, I often say, like, I don't care about them getting stronger. Who cares about that? That's not fun. If you told me that the only thing I did was get them stronger, it's like, come on, that I would have to quit my job tomorrow, because that's not what I believe at all.
And so what was it about your own upbringing, about your own childhood that, and maybe you can't put a finger on it, but here you are, an American woman being a male mentor to Dominican boys. So how does that connect?
I'm like this white girl from Nebraska teaching Dominican young men how to become grown men. A friend of mine, kind of a saying, a friend of mine from the Cardinals, we have like a saying, he would be traveling with me to the Dominican stuff. He's in the, Latin American department over there. And oftentimes like a situation would come up to where, for example, we're driving on the bus to a rural city in the middle of the Dominican to play a game, and they're blaring reggaeton and like dancing, and, you know, and he would just look over and go, meanwhile, your parents in Nebraska are just, you know, having a cookout and watching. And so I think, I don't know if it was the contrast of, I grew up in Omaha and it's not super diverse, and it's just, you know, it's just any Midwest city. And I just had this urge to get out and see places and travel and know other cultures and not be within my own little box. And I think I definitely have thought about this a lot, and I can put a finger on it.
Yeah.
My parents for sure raised me to be extremely hardworking and also accepting of other people. And just really, I think I had a stellar upbringing, and I credit them with a lot of things, but I also literally can tell you that my dad worked for American Airlines for 35 years. So growing up, we traveled a lot. I mean, it wasn't because we were super rich and how else going to go. It was because we traveled for free. And so I, as a kid, grew up kind of like, getting on a plane was kind of like getting in a car to drive somewhere. It was free, and you just did it until I was 24. And so now I kind of have this travel bug in me. Both personally, I love to travel, and also professionally, is like travel is a great part of my job. And seeing the Dominican, and I mentioned, I think before we got on the podcast, is it's grounding. You know, I get to come to the Dominican Republic, and I just, every time I come here, I'm like, I'm just a dumb American. I'm just dumb. I'm so, so accustomed to certain things. And it just reminds me of how fortunate I am and how I have to help other people. I have a very strong, affliction to helping other people and empowering other people on my journey. And that's something I live by. It's a creed of mine that, what are you doing in the world if you're not changing somebody else's life? So
that's fantastic. And so talk a little bit about what it sort of means to be a pioneer in this industry, because here you are, the first female to sort of break into professional baseball. What has that challenge been like? What's the struggle been? Has it felt like a struggle? What are those obstacles been?
I do want to just first and foremost give credit to the organizations that have hired me, because when people say, hey, what's it like to be a pioneer? I'm kind of like, well, I view myself as like the chess piece, and the Cardinals are not, first and foremost, the most, they deserve the most credit for hiring me in the first place, even as an intern back in 2012. And then obviously as full time as a coordinator. And then the Chicago White Sox also gave me an opportunity in hiring me as an intern in the Fall League, and the Astros. I mean, those are the people that really make the difference. So, and how appropriate to talk about this on Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah.
Because Jackie Robinson wouldn't be who he was if Brant Trickey hadn't given him the opportunity. And so obviously then there comes the second piece, which I believe, you know, it's Jackie Robinson is who he is because he was the right person for the job. There might have been other people who were more talented than him, but he was the right person to do it. And Branch Rickey knew that, and he selected him specifically because he knew he was the right person for the opportunity. He knew he was the right person to be the chess piece,
yeah,
you know, to open up doors for other people. And I, as much as credit I would give to other organizations, I'll also give myself a little credit in saying that I don't think that every woman could do this job. And it's a responsibility. It's a, I don't want to say a burden, but it is a struggle at times. I have to definitely be more conscious of what I'm doing than any other human being that works in baseball, and any other woman that goes to her job on a daily basis. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I think about that I'm so accustomed to thinking about that I forget that I even do it, that I just, I do things. I go out of my way to make sure that I'm coming off in the correct way to the players so much that I forget that I do all that stuff. Like sometimes I'll just like, oh, I forgot that I just do it now and I don't even think about it, but it's something that I make conscious decisions to make sure that I'm presenting myself in the correct manner. And, you know, not everyone would be willing to accept that responsibility. And then the third piece probably is that, I don't want to say that was negative, but that's like kind of a, you know, it is a struggle at times, but it's also a huge opportunity. And the opportunity there is obviously for young women to have someone to look for as a beacon or an idea or a representation of a possibility for them. And I know that I looked at women like Dr. Meg Ritchie Stone, Dr. Stone, from Eastern Tennessee State University. She was the first head strength and conditioning coach as a woman in collegiate athletics. And also people like Sue Falsoni, who was with the Dodgers as a physical therapist. Mm-hmm. Not the same, you know, profession, but similar situation, obviously. So I know that those women were really important for me, even though they weren't exactly, you know, in my realm. But they were extremely important for me to say, like, you know what, if someone can accept them, then someone's going to be able to accept me. So that third piece of having an opportunity to, again, just to empower other people, to impact lives, to be able to reach out to young women and represent an idea of a possibility for their future.
And what is it about you, what is it about your character or your mental toughness or your sense of purpose that makes you know that you are the chess piece, you are the right piece for this?
I've also given thought to this as well, is that I'm like, there are people who do their work, there are people who work hard, and then there are people who are undeniable. And that is something I knew. I had to be undeniable. You know, I wasn't going to take the easy route. I have a phrase I like to use called the two things. And when someone says, well, that's too hard, or that's too far, or that's too, you know, it's too expensive to work for free as an intern, it's too dangerous to go to the Dominican Republic. When people say it's too something, then I say, I'm going to go do that. Because basically since day one, I knew that I wanted to have the best resume out there. And it's as simple as that. You know, when people ask me, how did you learn Spanish? I'm like, how did you not learn Spanish? Like it wasn't even a question for me. You know, I knew that I was going to be working in baseball and working with Latin American players. And if I wanted to be the best strength and conditioning coach, the best candidate, the best coach for the players, someone that was at the top of her game, that's what I needed to do. It's very simple. It wasn't even a question. It's not like I grew up speaking Spanish in Omaha. I sure did not. So I think what is it about me that sets me apart is my work ethic. And I know that people say all the time that I work hard, but I truthfully believe, and I even wrote a blog about stop saying that you work hard, because I have yet to meet really my match or someone that works harder than me. I've met several people, a handful of people, luckily people that I'm surrounded by right now with the Houston Astros. I've met a handful of people that match me, but no one that really has... I've looked at them and said, wow, I feel like I don't work very hard compared to that person.
Yeah.
And that's just a simple, if I had to give you my strength, I don't think I'm the smartest strength coach, and I don't think I'm the most experienced, and I don't think that I will ever be the smartest strength coach. I don't think that's who I am, but I will I will outwork you for sure. I don't have any question about that. And then on like, that's on the professional side.
Yeah.
But that's something I think about with the players and how I come off to the players. You asked me like, what is it about, you know, my persona or my personality, and I can't physically outdo these guys. I can't. Maybe some of the young Dominican 15-year-olds, I still got them on the spot. I can still get them on the deadlift. But basically, by the time they come to me from college, a lot of them are going to be way stronger than I am physically. But I can tell you right now, my mental toughness is right up there with a lot of our players, and they know it. I show up at 4 to work out, and by the time, you know, I get done, by the time everybody else is rolling in, and I'm dripping in sweat, and I already worked my ass off before they even woke up, yeah. You know, and I'm the standards that I hold myself to are extremely high in a lot of different ways. And they see that, you know, whether I say it or not, or they directly see, they don't see me work out at 4, but they, you know, like that's a demeanor. It's a persona. It's a creed that I live by. And I'm always, always, always trying to get better. And I'm always putting 1000% effort into what I'm doing. And they do see that over time. So it's a way of earning respect, really.
So when did that start for you? Can you think back to a seminal moment in your childhood, or was it just in your DNA? Can you remember when you took on?
Oh, no doubt. That's Jim and Bonnie Balkovec, my friends. I kind of joke with my mom now, and, you know, I have two sisters, and they're both really high-performing people, too. They're very driven, and we joke with our parents. We love them. We, like, so appreciate the upbringing, but we joke with them about how like militant they were with us. And you know, like I had a job when I was 15, and even though I didn't need it, you know, they probably could have supported me with whatever I needed. And I like thought I was poor until I got to college. You know, they would not let us have anything. We had to earn everything we got. I had a job when I was 15 on the books, but I was babysitting and everything when I was like 11, and just everything that we did was directed at working hard and doing everything correctly. And I was always a little crazy. I was probably, you know, more crazy than I needed to be. But I do remember, like, there was a point of craziness in my childhood that I can remember. I started playing softball. I started playing travel softball when I was 12 years old. And I didn't do very well my first year of travel softball because I was coming from a rec and it was fast pitch and I was just like so far behind everyone. And so the second year kind of rolled around and we were going to the first practice. My dad was driving me to the first practice and he goes, oh, you know, I was like, are you sure you want to do this, Rach? Are you sure you want to play softball again? And looking back, I mean, I didn't know what he was saying, but he was basically like trying to talk me out of it probably. And I was like, Dad, how else can I get a college scholarship and play for the Rockets, which was a professional softball team? So here I am, like, little Rachel, 12 years old, thinking 6 years ahead to a college scholarship and, like, 10 years ahead to playing professional softball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if that tells you anything about how I was as a kid, you know, I was definitely age 12, age 13. I was, like, the only girl in the weight room, you know, at the local gym. I would go with my dad, and I would always work out doing whatever the heck I was doing. And I was always that person that was going to, from day one, just outwork you. I might not be as good as you, but if I have any talent or the ability, I'm eventually going to get there, and I'll probably do it better than you do.
That's great. And so you mentioned being in the Dominican now and being the dumb American. What have you learned most about yourself being over there?
I could go on for an hour just on that question. I've probably learned that, you know, as much as I'm a driven person and I do imagine that someday I do imagine that someday I will have a job that will afford me an opportunity to be very wealthy. Like just based off of, I'm going to work hard and probably be at the top of whatever I'm doing. I don't mean to sound cocky, but like I have faith in my work ethic. Okay. So no matter what though, it doesn't matter to me how much wealth I accumulate. Wealth is not impressive to me in that way, as far as like monetary wealth. I never aspire to have a large house. I never aspire to own a lot of things. I definitely am a minimalist and a hippie and a flower child at heart. I have very little, very few possessions, and the possessions I do have are usually like from the Goodwill. Like furniture, all my furniture in my apartment is Goodwill and secondhand and antiques and crafts and those kinds of things. And I just never aspire to have any wealth at all, really. My passion lies in what I do and the process of doing it, and not really what it's going to get me in the future. Unless it's a plane ticket to travel and go see something, you know. But I'm very much like a collect experiences, don't collect things type of person. And I think I always kind of had that in me, but the Dominican traveling back and forth to a third world country on a regular basis has definitely like nailed that into my brain. And, you know, being a Midwest girl and not having lavish things. And like I said, my parents never gave us, we didn't have any brand name things and we didn't have nice cars and all that stuff. And at the time, you know, growing up, it's like you see everyone else around you and your friend is driving a brand new car. But now I'm just so thankful for that upbringing, and I'm thankful that I have the experiences of seeing, you know, seeing people who aren't as fortunate as I am, and that's definitely something that has been solidified by traveling to the Dominican Republic is just appreciating the people around you and the experiences that you have, and not, you know, the things that you have, because you could be miserable even if you have a ton of things, you know.
Yeah. And working with these young athletes, you're getting them at such a young age. If there was one idea that you feel like you try to convey the most to them, what would that be?
Las cosas grandes están una cosa. Las cosas pequeñas están una cosa muy grande. So that means that the little things are really a big thing. Add it all together. So. That's definitely like, I would say that I'm like pounding my work ethic into them. Like, you know, every little detail matters, and I'm not necessarily saying that if for some reason, like if they're, for example, they're doing stretch and if they're not paying attention in their dynamic warm-up, that means they're not going to get to the big leagues. That's not true. But the accumulation of focusing on the small things that people overlook and people don't want to do, and they're too hard or it's too early or whatever, you know, doing the two things, doing the things that are special, because everyone is working hard. You know, I'm down here working with the athletes in the Dominican for the Houston Astros, but guess what? Every other team is working every day. They're all waking up early. They're all playing baseball in the hot sun. You know, they're all staying up late. They're all taking English class. What are you doing different? You know, what are you doing that puts you in that upper echelon? And most people aren't willing to go there. So that's the concept, the work ethic, the discipline. That's the concept for sure that I want to impress upon them.
Very cool. And I know away from baseball, you do a lot of public speaking. I know you're a great role model for young girls, for young women. On your website, I know, is it the Phoenix Project?
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about what that's all about?
It is just getting going, but I'm excited about where it's going to go. So basically, you know, I was hired by the Cardinals as a full-time strength coach in 2014. And I thought to myself, like, this is it. I'm going to be so happy and I'm just going to love my life and it's going to be awesome. But very soon after that, I felt very, you know, I guess I'll just say empty or not satisfied or unfulfilled or whatever you want to say. But I quickly realized that my passion was then spreading that to other people and being able to send out the message. And so the Phoenix Pressures is part of that. I do a lot of public speaking to, I'll just say young athletes, not necessarily all women, but a lot of young women and even like businesses and up and coming young professionals. And talking to them about having a fortified mentality. And a part of that is I want to share other people's stories of strife and struggle, because I have my own little story of struggle. But to me, I look at other people and I think, God, like, what, I barely had to go through anything compared to you. And I just want to share their story. So the next one coming up is Megan Young, and she's a strength and conditioning coach at Auburn University. And she just got done with her last treatment of chemotherapy for cancer. And she just has a golden mentality. And even through all of her treatments and everything to do with her illness, she just had this amazing mentality. And I actually had dinner with her probably about a month ago now, and just talking to her, I was just so inspired. So I want to share her story and share her mentality, hoping that other people can listen to it and gain some strength through her, because I know that even myself looking at her, like, she's so inspiring. Just the way that she looked at her situation was completely opposite of what most people might think. So, I mean, the Phoenix Project, the the word the phoenix is based off of the mythical bird, the phoenix, and rising from the ashes. And so the Phoenix Project is fear, failure, fight, and flight. And so it's about basically facing your fear head on, accepting, acknowledging whatever that might be. I don't believe in fear. I think I don't believe in failure. I think it's a perspective. So no, nothing is ever a failure. Nothing is. Like every time something bad happens, quote unquote bad happens in my life, it's almost immediately now, if you can shift your mentality, it's almost immediately that I'm like, man, that sucks. And like five seconds later, I'm like, oh, but it's going to be so good because this, this, and this. And there's so many people that say, oh, this sucks for like weeks or months or years or decades. And you just think about how much time you waste. It's just incredible. So having that quote unquote phoenix mentality, I think, is just being able to rise from the ashes quicker. Like, how quickly are you able to turn your mentality around on a situation that you have? And the quicker you can turn it around, the better able you are to come out of it. Yeah. And better than before.
Yeah, not letting that 0 for 1 turn into an 0 for 4, right?
Exactly.
So you mentioned being with the Cardinals and sort of having that empty feeling. And so for you in general in life, when you kind of hit those rough patches, when you're stuck, when you're feeling empty, what's your go-to for you? Where's your inspiration come from? Where do you refuel and get your oxygen?
A couple things, but diving into the public speaking business is something, it might seem like I'm like overloading my plate to some people, and I've been told that a lot, like basically my entire life, but diving into that business and working with young women and mentoring young professionals on their resumes and all that kind of, like, that's like my fun time. That's super fun for me. I love doing that. I enjoy it. I look forward to it at the end of a long day. It's kind of like my relaxing time. Like, you go home and watch TV, I go home and work on my business and reach out to young people, and that's really fun. And then also volleyball. I needed a way to get away from the office, and I kind of stumbled upon volleyball in Jupiter. I stumbled upon a great community and kind of started making friends with that. And so usually, as you can imagine, I'm the type of person that would just stay working until 10 p.m. every night if I didn't have anything to go. So kind of volleyball, I play beach volleyball on a regular basis, and I actually want to compete in volleyball at some point. And, you know, I just basically – people are waiting on me to be at the court. So I'm like, okay, well, it's 5 o'clock and I can easily stay here for another 6 hours, but I got to go to the court. See you later. And then I get a workout in, obviously. So it's mentally and physically a release. So that's definitely something that I have to plan into my days, so that I'm not just, you know, working forever. So those two things I would say are my release.
Excellent. And so just to last question here, Rachel, then I'll let you go and get back to work, because I know that's what you're going to do. You're going to go back to work.
You're so right.
I know the sun's been down for a couple hours there in the Dominican, but you'll go back to work. One final message, one final thought. Again, you've had all this experience so far just working with all these different athletes, different ages, different cultures. If you could just share one message with the people that you work with, or just, you know, aspiring young people, what's that one idea or that one thing?
Many, but I've talked about this a little bit in my posts and stuff, but I always like to say that, you know, there's no such thing as being in the right place at the right time. My path has led me to living in 12 different cities and 2 different countries and working for like 9 different strength and conditioning places. And, you know, I don't regret any of it. And I've worked for free, I think, longer still. I don't know. I might be like even with the amount of time that I've worked and been getting paid.
Yeah.
I worked for free, I think, for like 4 years, and I'm only on my third year of like an actual full, you know, salary job. So,
right.
You know, there's no such thing as being in the right place at the right time. It's being in the right place all the time. And so don't be afraid to take a step back in some people's eyes to take a step forward. I always viewed that as if I was taking a step backwards, you know, in somebody's eyes. I always had that plan. I always knew that even if I was technically I went back to interning after getting paid and da 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 da. There was no step back. It's only what's going to long-term benefit me. And so I just was never worried about being completely broke. And I was never worried about, well, I probably was a little worried about being broke because I needed to eat. But I would always tell people, like, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to just settle for the job that I sit down at my desk and I start looking for other jobs. I want my dream job, and I, you know, I want my cake, and I want to eat it too. Dang it. And I'm going to hold out, you know, I'm going to hold out for not only the perfect job, but the perfect people that I want to surround myself with. And I'm not going to lower my standards, and I'm going to do anything and everything to make that happen. And so I was going to be in the right place all the time. Not just, it didn't fall into my lap. It wasn't in the right place at the right time. I wasn't lucky. None of that. I took calculated steps to be where I'm at today. And I think that's a message that some young people kind of mix up. They want something too quickly, and they just jump into something that, you know, just because it's paid or it's convenient or whatever. And that's, I would advise against that route.
Excellent. I love that. Being in the right place all the time. That's fantastic. So much good there. Well, Rachel, thanks so much. I can't believe that we actually got through this entire interview without any internet problems.
It's a miracle. It's a Christmas miracle, I'm telling you.
And the next time you're back in town, especially in Jupiter, now I know that you're in Jupiter to play volleyball, so it's right down the street from me. So next time you're in town, let's get together, and we'd love to talk more.
Absolutely.
But so excited to share this with everybody, and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, too.
You got it. Thank you.